Oftentimes, the most pressing challenges farmers and ranchers have with livestock guardian dogs have nothing to do with breeding, training philosophies, and the intricacies of the canine mind. Sometimes it comes down to the basics. What should I feed them? How do I feed them? And how do I keep track of them? Solve those problems, and you've got a great start toward success with LGDs. Welcome to Farm Dog. This is Farm Dog, the podcast about the working dogs of farming, ranching, homesteading, and rural living. Farm Dog is presented by Goats on the Go, a national network of independent business owners who provide sustainable weed and brush control for their customers using goats. Want to put goats to work on your vegetation problem? Interested in launching your own goat grazing business? The place to start is goatsonthego.com. Welcome to Farm Dog. I'm your host, Aaron Steele. I'm glad you have joined us for this bonus episode, coming at you a little more quickly than we usually post. That's because we recently had a fantastic conversation with Bill Costanzo, who works for Texas A&M AgriLife, working on research with livestock guardian dogs. We talked for so long with Bill and on such a variety of topics that we thought it'd be a great chance to just divide that recording up and bring it to you in two different pieces. So before we get on to the remainder of that conversation with Bill, I just want to point out that if you have questions or comments about any of the things we discuss or past episodes, or maybe you have a topic suggestion for a future episode of Farm Dog, you can leave us a message at farmdogpodcast.com. And also, if you feel like supporting us, there's an opportunity to shop for some branded merchandise on that site as well. Just click the shop button at the top of the website and you will see merchandise both from our sponsor, Goats on the Go, and from Farm Dog Podcast. So take advantage of that. If you'd like to throw us a little support, we would much appreciate it. And now on with the rest of our interview with Bill Costanzo. I was out checking some of our sheep today and preparing to move the animals to the next paddock. And I noticed just on the other side of the fence, a nearly dead raccoon. And I came to the conclusion that our Maremma probably got a hold of it and it got away, but didn't get very far. And it was destined, its life on earth was short thereafter. So, I was going to be moving the animals in there, and then it was going to have an even harder 30 seconds while the dog finished it off. So I went ahead and euthanized this raccoon. But it did make me think, is there any way to measure the effectiveness of a dog by the indicators that it's dealing? Pardon me, let me back up. Is there any way to measure the performance of a dog based on the evidence left behind of either dead predators, blood trails? What physical evidence is there that a dog is doing its job other than, we just seem to have more lambs this year?
That's kind of one misconception that a lot of folks have is that, they think their guardian dog needs to be aggressive and they should find, dead bobcats and dead coyotes everywhere and that type of thing. Guard dogs really don't work that way. There's three ways that guard dogs work. They exclude predators. So it's that scent marking that they go around and do, and they're patrolling and that kind of thing. Then, it's that disruption of the predator patterns. And the main way they do that is, and poor Great Pyrenees get blamed hard for this all the time, but it's the barking. And realistically, I don't think any guard dog breed barks any more than any other breed. I don't think that's true that Pyrenees just bark all the time, because I've got three registered Pyrenees of my own and a Pyrenees mixed dog. And, I don't think they excessively bark at all. But anyway, so they exclude predators, from the territory, they disrupt their patterns. And then the third way is that direct confrontation. But, people have to remember that guard dogs are a lot bigger than even, a mature male coyote. And the coyotes realize it's going to be a losing battle for them. They've got this 125 to 150 pound livestock guardian dog, and they're probably maybe 50 to 75 pounds at the most. I don't even know if they get that big, really. And so there's a size difference, and They realize that. And so you usually only see those dead coyotes or a dog, you know, that's covered in blood and has got something dead when whatever it is just can't get away from them. You know, the dog chases it into a corner and the coyote can't crawl under or go over the fence. And so the dog's able to catch it and the fight ensues. And obviously what happens, the coyote's going to lose. So you really can't use any of those type of things as judging, you know, how well your dog is working. You really have to look at, you know, what's your lambing or kitting percentage or calving percentage, you know, before dogs and then after dogs. That's really the way that, you know, you know if your dog is effective or not.
Right. Yeah. In this case, and this has happened before also, you know, with feral cats and raccoons and skunks and that sort of thing. I think this raccoon was just very unfortunate, crossed through a relatively small paddock, a little too close to where our dog was at the time. So, yeah, I've always felt the same. Like with the, we don't have nearly the kind of predator pressure that you have down there. And I felt, look, if I could just have a dog stay with the sheep and goats, and pee in the right places and bark at the right times, we've pretty much taken care of it. I doubt that the number of confrontations are actually ever that high, but you know, it all happens out of your sight. So I was just curious about your thoughts on that. Yeah. We're here at the end. I think we just transitioned into fall officially. The summer has ended. And so therefore there will no longer be hot temperatures here or in Texas, right?
I wish.
Yeah, right.
We're still in the upper 90s here, which I guess, you know, I shouldn't complain because, you know, we were in the you know, hundreds for many weeks without any rain. And so I probably should be thankful that we're under the 100-degree mark for, you know, the majority of the days. And the mornings are getting cooler. I think fall is definitely coming. So that's a good thing. But
yep. Yep. Well, I was just thinking the other day, we were still having some hot temps, at least during the afternoon. And I have been giving some young dogs some shifts with some this year's kid crop. This year's kid crop is kind of close to the house. And so I've been got these young dogs. I've been giving them some time while I'm out doing chores or where I'm going to be sitting at my computer close to where I can hear if there's any problems, you know, just kind of slowly transitioning them into these kids where I'm not sure until recently that I could trust them with them. And I noticed that when I put them in there in the afternoon, they mostly just laid around. And then as it cooled off and got into the evening, that, you know, that's when the goat kids start getting a little crazy and rambunctious, and that just fires up the dogs a little bit, and the dogs start playing with the goat kids. And but lo and behold, if I just take them out then and I put the dog back in with the adult nannies, we don't have any bad scenes and things seem to go really well. And I thought, holy cow, I am a genius. I just figured out the best livestock guardian dog training tip ever, which is expose them to new animals, especially sensitive animals or susceptible animals, during the heat of the day. Nothing bad will happen, and you can kind of control the circumstances. And I thought, that's amazing. I am like champion dog trainer today. And it was literally 2 days later that I see a post from Bill Costanzo on one of the social media channels saying, hey, we're getting some great things done with this heat. It's a great opportunity to get these young dogs exposed to some other animals or something to that effect. And I was pleased to hear that Bill agreed with something I said, but a little disappointed to find out that I'm not quite the trainer that I thought I was. So,
you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. Because obviously we've mentioned GPS trackers and stuff like that. So just when I had gotten hired, it had started before that and kind of finished that very first year. Our former center director before he retired had took a bunch of that GPS tracker data of livestock and dogs and, you know, analyzed it and everything. And so, you know, what he used to like to do is he'd ask somebody, well, hey, you know, when are livestock guardian dogs most active? And sure enough, every time, oh, at night. Well, how come? Well, because I hear them barking, you know? And that's actually not true. The dogs follow the same pattern as your livestock. While they do bark a lot at, early morning, late evening, because they're letting predators know, hey, I'm here on duty. We had about a year and a half worth of tracker data that we looked at. See, there were seven different dogs there. The ranch is about 5,000 acres. And we also had tracker data on some of the sheep and goats. And so, like I said, the dogs follow the same movement pattern as your livestock. They're pretty much, bedded down at night, even though they may be barking. Okay. Mid-morning, around 9 o'clock, they get active. Their dogs are moving, livestock are moving. Middle of the day, because it starts to get warm, everybody beds down. Late afternoon, again, as it starts to cool off, livestock and dogs get active again. And then, at night, again, everybody beds down. So, we're pretty confident with a year and a half worth of data on seven dogs that, they really aren't active at night the majority of the time, even though you hear them barking a whole bunch from time to time. They're not up moving around like we thought they were.
Right. Yeah, that's fascinating. So we assume that as the sun is setting and the dogs are really active and barking and, starting to move around a lot, that that just continues through the night, that that's just the start of the night activity, the night shift. But really, it's just in those transition times during the day. So in the evening and then in the morning when they're active, just like the stock are. That's fascinating. Yeah, I never would have guessed that.
Some other things, that we got just from that same study is th those dogs traveled on average 7 miles a day with a range of 4 to 12. And that's just on a 5,000 acre ranch. So, if you had a bigger place, they could be traveling even more than that. So, I use that kind of information that we get from the trackers to encourage producers, look, you got to feed your dogs a good quality kibble because, a year and a half, this is what it showed in our data that these dogs were doing. So if you've got a ranch even bigger than this, they're probably traveling even more. And so, those are all kind of little things that we do with the information we get from GPS trackers.
Yeah, excellent. And that leads me into another question. This is going to be a bonus length episode because I have so many things to talk to Bill about. But one of the things on my list
All good.
was first of all, I've been asking, we've had a couple of dog food producers on, and I've just asked for their advice. What they like to say is, yes, it's more expensive, but a good quality food you feed so little of that it's really not that big a difference in price, and you're giving the dogs what they need, and you can be sure about it. I say, yeah, but so many of these livestock guardian dogs are out on automatic feeders or self feeders. How on earth can I afford to give them that expensive feed and give them all day access to it? And then I think, yeah, but what have I seen for my livestock guardian dogs? I give them a self feeder, and sometimes I feel like I've got to take them to the vet to see what's wrong. It doesn't seem like they're eating anything at all. That dog food's just not disappearing. So, what's your experience with the dogs you've encountered? Can they handle a self feeder? Do you have to feed a lot of a low quality feed in order just to keep costs down? Or can they handle an expensive feed and just eat a little bit of it?
So I guess here's our experiences. When I started, we were feeding a low quality feed because it was cheap and inexpensive, and they wanted to try to keep costs down. And so what I was seeing, though, is we had a lot of dogs that were under body condition score where they should be. Purina has developed a phenomenal body condition scoring chart that you can go onto their website and download. There's several different versions of it that they have. And they've also got a really good video on how to body condition score your dog. And so I'd encourage producers to go in and look at Purina's website. And that's Nestle Purina, not Purina Mills. So we were having a lot of issues with our dogs not staying in condition and then getting sick, getting injured. and spending a lot of time at the vets and in the kennel and that kind of thing. And so I went about trying to find a better feed, and I slowly just kind of increased the quality of feed over time. And we were feeding a private label feed that was manufactured here in Texas by a feed store that's local in San Angelo. And so I just wasn't seeing the results, even though it said it was a good quality feed on the tag based on what was there. We weren't getting the results with the dogs. So, I don't have an unlimited budget, just like most producers. I can't go and buy $80 bags of Pro Plan, for instance. So, I talked to some different, dog food companies, looked at their ingredients, looked at, protein percentages, fat contents, that type of thing. I talked to our canine nutritionist. And so, I kind of narrowed it down to a couple different brands, and then I got into cost. What is it costing us per pound, and versus amount of protein and all that type of thing. And so, what we've been using since we've been using it for a year now. We started last September, and we've been feeding Diamond High Energy, and I've been very, very happy with that brand of dog food and that formula from them. The Diamond High Energy, oh, I don't want to misquote it, but I want to say it's around 24% protein and I think 20% fat. That high fat content has done amazing for our dogs. We don't have issues, at three of the locations now. We have four different locations, so we're still struggling with one location, but three of the locations, dogs are healthy constantly. Everybody's in a nice four or four and a half body condition score all the time. And, nobody's getting sick and or anything like that. The one location we're having some issues with, it's not a food related issue. It's a getting enough feed to the dogs on a regular basis issue. And so that ranch doesn't have a full-time herdsman there. It's just a retired gentleman who goes, a couple times a week. And so we're struggling with raccoons and other things, just like regular ranchers do, eating all the dog food and the dog's not getting it. So, oh, but yeah, that's what we feed. And like I said, I've been super happy with it. I even switched our puppies from, the traditional old Purina puppy chow, like in the blue bag, that's been around for, God, I don't know, 100 years probably or whatever. I switched over to the Diamond puppy chow this last round of dogs, and I've seen a huge difference in the puppies too. What was happening is the puppies would be, real healthy looking and kind of chunky in the bonding pen. We'd release them into the pastures, still at the center, not going out to a ranch yet, but we'd put them into the pastures, and man, within a week or so, they'd be getting skinny. And really attributed it, for the longest time, I figured, well, this puppy chow, my dog own dogs have always done well on it. It's just because they're starting to run around and stuff now, and that's why they're losing some weight. Well, on the Diamond dog food, those puppies have stayed in the same condition that they were in the bonding pen. So everybody still looks really healthy. Nobody's gotten, kind of on the skinny side. And so I don't think you should spend, like I said, $80 or $100 a bag of dog food for a livestock guardian dog. But on the other hand, I don't think you should go down to Walmart and buy a pallet of Old Roy either. Find something that's in the middle that you can afford, that has a good protein level, a good level of fat to them, to it, and has some good quality ingredients. There's some good dog foods that are available, like at Tractor Supply, that are their private label, that aren't, $50 or $60 a bag, that I feed to my own guard dog and he does really well on. So
Yeah, and I'm gonna guess from that you have not had trouble with dogs overeating or becoming over-conditioned.
no, we have not. Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, all of our dogs are self-fed. We do when, and that's the way most producers here in Texas, the larger producers that we work with predominantly, that's the same thing. They've got a feeding station, they've got a self feeder, and that's how they, it works for them. Because, and people are like, well, my God, they don't see their dogs every day. I'm like, look, these guys have 60,000 acres. They might have 30 dogs, or 40 dogs. And yeah, no, they're not going to see their dog every single day of the week. They might not see a dog for a week at a time, because it's out on a 2,000 acre pasture. So, yeah, now, I mean, we do supplemental feed the dogs. So, when guys are going out checking livestock, checking waters, that kind of thing, if they see a guard dog, they'll give it a can of food, pour out some dry food for it. One, it keeps them socialized, and two, it's just a way to give them some extra feed, out in the field to keep working. What the other thing that I used to notice a lot too when we were feeding the cheaper quality foods is the dogs just weren't as active. They were staying put a lot more and not moving around as much. Because I think they just didn't have the energy to do it. And so they seem like they're more active now. When I look at the GPS trackers, they're not hanging out next to the feeder all the time. They're moving all over the pastures, and following wherever the sheep and goats are going. So those are, you've got to look at those kind of things, when you're making that decision. Do I buy the Old Roy, or do I buy the Diamond or the Victor brand dog food? You've got to weigh some of those options that it's not something that you necessarily see on a regular basis, and you may have some predation losses too, because the dogs don't have the energy again to constantly be out on the move. If they're traveling 7, 8, 12 miles a day, that's a lot of calories that those dogs are burning, and they need a good quality kibble to keep up with that.
Right. So I think what I'm supposed to do as a responsible podcast host is point out that Diamond Dog Food is not a sponsor of the show.
That is
If
correct.
Diamond
That
Dog
is for
Food
sure.
wants to be a sponsor of the show, call me up. But I also am a fan of Diamond Dog Food. Have been for my bird dogs as well. They just seem to kind of get into that premium territory without the premium price. I think that they're end up being a good value. And in fact, we did an episode a while back where we talked about, I've actually put together a spreadsheet that you can download from farmdogpodcast.com that allows you to compare apples to apples, because every dog food is telling you to feed different amounts to different weight ranges of dogs. So it's nearly impossible to say, well, what is the real cost of this dog food versus this one? And is it worth it or not? So I put together a spreadsheet that attempts to do that. So you can listen to that podcast episode and also download that spreadsheet if you like. And I've just found that all of the Diamond Dog Food formulas typically come out on top when you compare them to, the similar formulas from other mid to higher end brands of dog food. In fact, I was feeding Diamond Original to our livestock guardian dogs in a self feeder, and I thought one was the food just wasn't disappearing very quickly. So I thought I worked with him to make sure he understood how to get in the feeder. That didn't seem to be a problem. I started to worry about him a little, so I switched to Diamond High Performance. Just like you know, Diamond high energy, I think.
Yeah, they have a high performance, or I think it's just performance, and then there's the high
Performance.
energy one
High
also.
energy. Yeah, high energy is the one that we switched to just for a little more protein and fat. And yeah, I mean, he's just done great. His energy has never level drop level, pardon me, his energy level has just never dropped. And I've been, quite pleased with those dog foods. I'm wide open to the possibility that there's something I'm missing. But I've just been around too many dogs that you couldn't put them on expensive dog food in a self feeder and expect there to be any left, the next day. But so far, not so with the livestock guardian dogs on our place. We've been really pleased with that. You also mentioned, Bill, that you were. You have some ranches where the dog food disappears because of raccoons and other animals.
Yes, sir.
And I remember seeing in some of your posts recently something about a self-feeder for dogs that keeps sheep and goats out and has an RFID door so that it opens when the dog approaches it, but not when the sheep and goats approach it. So, or a raccoon approaches this. So tell me about that. What stage are you in with that, and what are you finding?
So we tried that out with gosh, it's been a while now. I think that was the second and third round of dogs that we ran through the bonding pens. And so what we did is we took just a and again the this isn't sponsored by PetSafe or anything like that, but we took a PetSafe extra large dog door that you would put on your house, and we attached it to a feeding station. And so it worked off of RFID. So the dog wore a little tag, walked up to the door. The door made a little noise, opened up. Dog was able to get inside, eat, and then leave. And it kept everything out. And so that system worked phenomenally well for us in the bonding pens. You know, once we had the puppies trained to it, they understood to walk up, wait for the sound to happen, then they could push on it, hop inside, you know, and then leave, and it kept everything out. We took that same system and tried it out on one of the ranches. And for those that have had guard dogs like yourself for a while, you probably understand that they are very, they like the status quo. They do not like change, and they don't adapt to change very well. And so we literally tried for 4 months to get three of the guard dogs at that ranch to go into that system. It was the exact same feeding station, except for the door that they had already been used to using. Okay. So it wasn't like it was something completely new for them. At month four, I just told the herdsman out there, I'm like, look, this, we've tried everything. I mean, we took the door off, we took the whole front gate off, we took the roof off of it. I mean, we tried everything, enticing them with wet food inside the station, outside the station, halfway in between the door, like you name it, we tried it, and we could not get those older dogs to go inside. So that's kind of where I hadn't given up on the idea, but we were just kind of put it on hold at that point. And so my concern with it at the time also was, you know, is this plastic dog door going to actually hold up when it's out on a ranch? And, you know, you got 200-pound hogs pushing up against this thing. I really didn't think it was going to hold up long term. So kind of went back to the drawing board, and we were thinking about all kinds of different ways. And I was investigating, and I have been investigating all kinds of different systems. So I think since the, I'm not sure if it was, we had this GPS tracker system the last time I talked to you or not, but we've moved over to a LoRa tracking system. And basically, a LoRa system, I think there's a more technical name for it, but that's what we call it. It was a system designed by the US military that's now out for civilian use. And basically, just real simple terms, it uses like a repeater that's located on the ranch to send the signal from the trackers to the repeater, and then it sends the signal to the towers. Okay. So, and on a side note, like that's been a phenomenal system for us. We've switched that over at three locations, and I even want to switch it over in San Angelo, even though we don't really need it there because we have great cell service. It'd just be easier to have it, all the ranches on the same system. So if somebody's looking for a GPS tracker system, I would strongly recommend the LoRa system. It's cheaper. You get 15-minute updates and locations, you know, and the batteries last like about 5 months in the collars. So anyway, with this change, when we made this, it didn't matter at the time, but coming to 2023 in September here, those trackers also have Bluetooth ability inside of them. And so, yeah. And so the company has a control box that they use on dairies and feedlots that uses Bluetooth and allows gates to be opened automatically. to allow livestock to move to wherever you need them to go, like for dairy, you know, go up to the milking parlor or whatever. So I was talking to the tracker guy about this. I was like, man, you know, we got to come up with some type of system. We're just, you know, these coons are eating all the dog food. You know, we're feeding a good quality food, but, you know, the dogs just aren't healthy because varmints are eating everything still. So he told me about this system. And I said, man, that would be a heck of a thing if we could figure out how to mount that on a feeding station. The dog already has the tracker that we need. We just put this control box thing and then somehow hook it up to a gate that automatically opens. So that's where we are with the plan at this point. I'm waiting on a control box from the manufacturer. They are still having a lot of supply chain issues with circuit boards since COVID. Mm. I literally have a hard time even getting replacement trackers at this point because, you know, they come in and they're already like going out the next day because they've got tons of orders and they can't keep up with things. So what we're going to do is basically the same feeding station that people have probably seen on our Facebook page and YouTube videos and things like that. That third opening that's on there, we're going to mount an automatic door opener to it. And then my tracker guy is going to program it so that it is timed to open and close when it senses the dog's tracker to come up. Once we're able to do that, I think we'll be able to keep everything out of the feeding stations. The nice thing about this system is, one, we can still track the dogs. We'll be able to track what dog goes into the feeding station, how long they stay in the feeding station, how often they're coming to the feeding station. You know, so once we're able to do all this, you know, while you may not need that data on a daily basis of what's going on, you know, with the dog, if, for instance, somebody has a dog that's not doing well, okay, well, you can pull up, well, hey, the dog's going to the feeder every day. It's in the feeder for 10 minutes. The other dogs are in the feeder for 10 minutes. So it's not a feed issue with that dog. So maybe you need to take the dog to the vet. Or maybe it's the opposite. Well, the dog isn't going into the feeding station. You know, it's not staying in there the same amount of time. Well, then why isn't that happening? I really hope to already have a prototype built at this point in the year. You know, I just talked to our tracker guy again the other day, and he's like, man, you know, we're hoping sometime this fall that we'll have that unit. He's like, I've got everything else put together. You know, all I need is that control box, and you know, we can get you that, and then I can put together the door and all that kind of thing on it. So that's kind of where we are, you know, where we've evolved to at this point in time.
Sure.
I am working with a producer that we've worked with before. He's got kind of a similar concept with a dog, with specifically just with a dog feeder. It doesn't use the tracker. It uses the RFID technology. But I'm going to see if we can, you know, get some type of a system put together, maybe where it's just on the feeder itself. So we are trying to make some headway on that for people, you know,
yeah,
to keep everything out of the feeder except for the dog.
That's really fascinating. I mean, the learning opportunities that are opened up by that information, you know, besides just allowing your dog to eat without the raccoons and possums getting in there to eat it, you know, there's so much the information that can be gained from that. You know, for example, you gave several good examples, but what if your dog repeatedly approaches the feeding station but never activates the gate? Or what if your dog activates the gate, goes in, but is gone again in 10 seconds, you know, or immediately? I mean, that could indicate that you have some dominance issues with your dogs, and one of the dogs is not allowing another one to eat. You know, it just could give you so much insight into something that you don't typically have good information on. So I'm excited to hear where you go with that.
Yeah, I am too. The other thing, this company that we work with here is just phenomenal. It's Lone Star Tracking. And again, they're not, you know, sponsor your channel or anything like that. But, you know, for folks, at least in Texas or surrounding states, are looking for trackers, I would strongly recommend them. They've been phenomenal to work with. They've donated systems to us that, you know, they wanted to try out and get feedback on. You know, this system, they're donating all the time to put in, you know, to get this thing to try to work for us. And, you know, some of this stuff, they talked to me a while back and said, hey, you know, do you mind if we use some of the data that, you know, that you're collecting on these dogs? I said, hey, no problem at all. You need to, you know, what are you going to do with all this stuff? Well, so what they're doing anyway is they're working on an artificial intelligence program. They're collecting and using some of the data that we get from the trackers. And what they're going to be able to do with it eventually is they'll be able to tell us, well, hey, dog ABC is not keeping up with the rest of the dogs all the time. You might want to check and see why, you know, it's lagging behind. It's not putting in as many miles, or, you know, its temperature is hotter than the other dogs. It hasn't gone to water as much as some of the other dogs. And the same thing with the livestock that we're tracking as well. And so, you know, a producer will be able to use that information to, you know, diagnose what's going on with certain animals and why they're not, you know, as healthy as other animals. And so it's really amazing that they'll be able to do all this stuff just based on GPS tracker data.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really exciting. Bill, I've kept you a long time and I really appreciate it. Appreciate you giving us the time that you have. Is there anything you'd like to promote to our listeners, places where they can find you, things they can follow from you? I know that since you are an extension organization, that a big part of your mission is reaching people, and being able to reach lots of people also often results in better grant funding for you to do even more and better research on livestock guardian dogs that we all benefit from. So lay it on us, and audience, go out and follow Bill.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, yes, we do. And just as you mentioned, you know, the more followers that we have on our Facebook page, Instagram, YouTube channel, we use those numbers to, you know, go to organizations that provide grants and say, hey, look, you know, this is our outreach. This is how many people we can affect. If you give us this funds, this is where our research can go, and this is how many people we can help. So, you know, we do have a Facebook page and Instagram. We have a YouTube channel. I'm always adding more videos. I think we've got around 70 videos or so on YouTube. It amazes me how much time people spend on YouTube all the time. And I've added a bunch of stuff. If you haven't been on our website lately, I've made a bunch of updates to it in probably the last 6 months or so. There's a whole page now dedicated to research from all over the world about livestock guardian dogs. So if you're looking for specific things, you can go onto that. And again, it's all proven research. It's not, you know, well, somebody on Facebook said, you know, to do this type of thing. I'm adding fact sheets all the time. I found a bunch of fact sheets from our wildlife specialists, and I added those to our website on predators and how to control predators and things like that, along with ours that we had on, that I add all the time for livestock guardian dogs. The case studies from the research projects that we've done are on the website too. And people can also sign up for the blog that I write each month on our website. So,
very cool. Yeah. We will put links to all of those places in the description of this episode. But just real quickly, Bill, what kind of Google search would be best for people to type in? Just like Texas A&M livestock guardian dog, will that produce what they're looking for?
Yeah, if they just do a Google search of Texas A&M livestock guardian dog, or just Texas A&M LGD program, they'll be able to find the website, our Facebook, all the social media stuff with that. Yep.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you so much, Bill. It's good to talk to you again. If it's okay with you, we'll continue to check in now and then.
Sure. I'd be happy to do it. And hopefully the next time, you know, we've got that automated feeder system working for you, and we can talk about that.
Awesome. Can't wait. Take care, Bill.
You too. Thank you very much, sir.
See ya. Thanks for listening to Farm Dog. If you enjoyed this episode or any of the other episodes, please subscribe, leave us a positive review, and tell someone about it. Thanks.